and good morning. This is not Wednesday Talk Radio. This is an unnamed Friday public affairs program, and my name is Paul Rowland, ordinarily your host for Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. And as Sam just said, we do have a special program on an issue of urgent and immediate interest, especially to the people who here in the studio and probably many of you listening. And we'll have call-ins for this program at 503-231-8187. A brief introduction. The houseless population in Portland continues to increase as housing prices and rents skyrocket and as economic and environmental refugees make their way to the Pacific Northwest. Last October, the city declared a housing emergency, and in February of this year, Mayor Charlie Hales decided to allow overnight camping on city property to alleviate the houselessness crisis, and the burden on shelters and social services stretched well beyond capacity. The Springwater Trail Corridor in southeast Portland, established in the 1990s on an old Portland to Boring rail line that was discontinued in 1989, became an attractive place for Portland-based and transient houseless people and travelers because of its extensive overgrown and woody areas with easy access from the trail. Its population has certainly grown since Hale's policy change and a result of previous, quote, sweeps of other preferred camping spots. Estimates put 500 or more people now living in tents, under tarps, and in other makeshift shelters along the corridor. Some live by themselves or as couples or in families, and some have developed small communities of up to several dozen people. The media have made much of some incidents of violence along the trail, not to be diminished, including rape and occasional harassment of or annoyance to people using the trail for walking, running, or bicycling. Some neighbors who live in houses nearby, particularly in the Lentz neighborhood, have been annoyed by noise, garbage, and other issues involving the houseless residents. No thorough investigation that we are aware of has been undertaken of the actual number of such incidents and the number of people involved in them, and how this might compare to the population at large. Houseless people almost certainly have a higher than average share of physical and mental health and substance abuse issues, both as a contributing cause to becoming houseless, as an effect of the terrible strain of living on the margins and outside. Service organizations such as Boots on the Ground and Backpacks of Hope, among others, have helped people living the corridor with food and other necessities. Just last week, Mayor Hales changed his stance on city camping with regards to Springwater, citing its designation as a natural area and problems of environmental degradation from the impact of so many people living there, particularly along Johnson Creek. He called for a sweep or clean up of the corridor beginning August 1st, and that has been since postponed to September 1st, just a couple days ago. Both the service organizations and other houseless advocacy organizations, as well as housing and economic justice groups like Portland Tenants United, Jobs with Justice, Portland Solidarity Network, pushed back against the Hales plan and began to organize with the houseless residents against the planned, quote, sweep. They say that just evicting people without having a clear plan where to relocate them all will only make their existing health and economic problems worse and just push them to other areas of the city. A number of public assemblies were organized with over 100 people showing up, some of whom pledged nonviolent direct action to resist the sweeps. This past Monday, Hales went to meet with residents of the corridor and community allies, and on Wednesday announced a postponement, as I just said, of the evictions until September 1st. We will be exploring these issues and more with my guests. And the guests are, as Sam said, Jason Pilcher, a houseless resident for a year of the Springwater Corridor. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning.
Amanda Reese of Portland Backpacks of Hope. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Katie Berendt of Portland Tenants United.
Good morning.
So let's just get started. We'll go around and introduce yourselves. So, Jason, tell us about yourself, how you got to be living on the Springwater Corridor.
Okay, well, it started with my landlord taking my rent from $675 a month for our house to $1,500 a month. And we had really no chance to save money, anything to get out. And she said, either pay that or get out. And we got out.
So you say we?
My wife and I.
So both your wife and you are living there?
Yes.
And for how long now?
Well, we've been homeless for just over about a year and a half now. We lived in the house for about 6 years. And, yeah, she just raised our rent and we had to go. And then we went straight to a tent.
So how common would you say, like, in the general outlines of your story is amongst other people living out there?
Sadly, it's more increasingly by the day. I'm seeing new faces out there every day. I'm not only houseless, I am with Backpacks of Hope, and we help a lot of people, and there are a lot of new people every day.
Well, since you mentioned Backpacks of Hope, so talk about your organization, Amanda.
I started it a little over a year ago. I actually was homeless myself for 6 years. This is 9 years ago. And I decided that I wanted to put a little program together. We started out just passing out backpacks with little toiletries and, like, enough food to get through for a few days. It was only a few of us. We would go all over Portland. And then it's grown since. I have 9 members, including myself now. And we've gone from just passing out backpacks to moral support out there. We feed several times a week. Connect them to resources, things like that. And we have joined up with many community partners and trying to help them every day. So,
how's your organization supported?
Huh?
How do you support the organization?
We get donations from the community. Uh-huh. The community is wonderful. You know, we reach out, and also we're under an organization called Ad5. Lisa Lake, she works really hard to do a lot of fundraising for these organizations so that we have the funds to go out and help these people.
Okay, we'll talk more about all those things as we go along. And Katie, talk about, first of all, what Portland Tenants United is and how it's involved and why it sees this issue as something that's important to get involved in.
Well, Portland Tenants United is trying to bring tenants together to build a tenants union, a lot like what they have in other cities like San Francisco, so that we can collectively stand up for our rights as tenants and push back against, the landlord lobbies and the developers that really have control over this city's policy and the state as well. A lot of people are moving to Portland. They're moving here in large numbers. Not that there's anything wrong with that necessarily, but they are unfortunately displacing a lot of the current residents. We've got a lot of people with higher incomes moving in, pushing people with lower incomes farther and farther out until eventually they end up places like the Springwater Corridor because they simply have no other choice. That's largely a result of the free housing market that we have where there's really no controls on landlords. They're allowed to do pretty much whatever they want. And so they see all of these people coming in that are willing to pay more for housing. And, they want to maximize their profits because that's how our system works.
Because America's a land of opportunity.
Oh, yes. An opportunity for some, at least. These issues are so closely linked because pretty much all renters in this city are just one unaffordable rent hike or no cause eviction away from ending up homeless themselves.
And I neglected to mention at the outset that we have a fourth guest who will be joining us by phone later on. As I mentioned, these issues are so complex and intertangled that we're just getting a sense of at the beginning here. But there's also the other neighbors who live along the corridor, and not just there. There's, this neighborhood where KBOO is, there's people living up against businesses up and down the sidewalks here and people all over the city. Well, some parts of the city anyway. I'm sure some parts that wouldn't happen at all. This is an issue because, people aren't used to seeing people living in tarps and in tents in public spaces on sidewalks. And there are realistic issues of noise issues. I've heard neighbors talk. I know on our competitor station, Oregon Public Broadcasting, there was a story and focused on two-part story, one focused on the people living on the corridor and one focused on residents. And one person was talking about constant noise complaints and saying they ultimately decided they had to move. I don't know the truth of that. I haven't talked to the person myself. So there are very real issues for people, neighbors, housed neighbors who live along the Springwater Corridor. So we're going to have Robert Schultz, who's a public safety chair of the Lentz Neighborhood Association, who sort of put himself in the role of a mediator between the houseless residents and the housed residents, probably a very difficult position. So he'll be joining us in about half an hour. So stay tuned for that. And as I said, this is a call-in show. The number to call is 503-231-8187. So let's talk about the Hales' meeting, you know, because he's kind of a central figure in all this. You know, I don't know how much impact his decision to allow camping on city property had on the growth. You've seen, obviously, yourselves, what's been happening on the corridor, whether it's true or not, there's more people out there. With those issues, and we'll get into all that. So talk about the meeting you had with Mayor Hales on Monday.
Well, the meeting, I think we did real well in the meeting. I believe he heard what we needed, our demands. He put us, we asked for the sweeps to be stopped, sorry. And he met us part of the way and gave us an extension so we could help find resources for these people and help people get off the streets or into communities or whatever we need to do to make it not such a dramatic
exit.
I mean, we want to relocate, not disperse. We don't want to put people in more of a bad situation.
Because basically he gave people, what was it, like a couple weeks when he made that announcement that they're going to...
He gave a little over 2 weeks, which is obviously not enough time for service providers, advocates, to find places, connect to resources. We had several meetings before we had this meeting with the mayor trying to scramble, find funds. I mean, the number of beds open when we found out was so sad. And the meeting with the mayor, my take on it was he listened, but, you know, we set out a list of demands that were from the residents of the corridor. These came from their mouth, and we put that in front of the mayor, and I felt like, you know, he listened, but he wasn't willing to meet us, not even halfway. He did tell us that, you know, he was being sued for letting people camp and being sued for not letting people camp. And, you know, him and his staff were telling us how tired they were and they were working day and night to find, you know, places for these people to go and losing sleep. And, you know, my response was, well, so are we. And we don't get paid to do that. And we're out there day and night struggling. I mean, we skip meals, time away from our children, you know, we're out there. And, so I think that him delaying the sweep was, you know, partly because advocates and service providers cannot possibly come up with anything for this community in that short amount of time, and also the pressure of being sued. I know that it was brought up that there are people with disabilities. How can we possibly get them? They can't even walk to get a meal. I mean, Backpacks of Hope is taking in the meals to their tent because they cannot walk. And it's really sad. So I think he had a lot of pressure coming from all directions. So we'll see what happens.
And so, yeah, let me just read these, because there's actually, you can go to, if you go to the program page for this program, resisting evictions on the Springwater Corridor. Anyway, just look on the date Friday and this time, 9 o'clock, and you'll find the program page for this. And on there, or you can go to the Portland Tenants United web Facebook page where I got this from. And it has there's a form. You can actually write a letter. They say it's a petition, but I think it's actually a letter, as it seems like to me. I wrote one. And And there's certain demands. Don't sweep. Cancel the sweep. Well, that hasn't been canceled. It's been postponed. Communicate directly with the houseless community. Well, to some extent, they did that. Identify properties for organized outdoor shelter. We'll get into that. Commit resources for the safe relocation of people into these areas that makes accommodations for people with disabilities, does not re-traumatize people in the lead up to or during the move, and enables people to keep their belongings together and secure during the move, and ultimately find permanent and affordable housing for the houseless community. So maybe Katie, these, as you said, these issues are interlinked. The skyrocketing housing prices for both buying and renting houses, which is one of the factors that's pushing people into houselessness and outside of Portland. What is the city doing? I mean, they declared a housing emergency. What sort of things is the city actually doing that you can see concretely?
Not much. I mean, the big thing that they gave us was an extra 60 days notice if people get a no-cause eviction or a rent increase. We've moved from 30 days notice to 90 days notice, and that's it. And that, if you're going to declare an emergency, that doesn't seem nearly adequate.
Explain that notice again.
So, I mean, it used to be that, at the end of your lease, if you were getting a rent increase, or if you were getting a no-cause eviction, you would get 30 days notice. So now people are required to get 90 days. It just gives them more time to hopefully find another place to go. But the problem is that it is increasingly difficult to find housing. So, I had to find housing not that long ago, and it was a nightmare. I had, thankfully, time, because I was not working at the time, to scour the ads, to go to everything I could, to try to be the first person to call or email or show up. It is so ridiculously competitive, and most people who are working, who have families and things like that, have a really hard time just finding the time to do that. Landlords are really getting away with a lot. They're putting people through the ringer. They have increasing expectations in terms of deposits. They have higher, there are barriers for anybody who has any kind of record. It's just, one thing after another piles onto people that prevents them from finding a place. And before they know it, those 90 days go by fast, and they end up somewhere like the trail.
So obviously, one solution that some people talk about is actually going away from a competitive system to a non-competitive system, which means talking about actually making profit off of owning property. A long discussion, a long fight, but there's some really interesting alternatives that have cropped up in Portland and some other places. Portland, I don't know, seems to be maybe somewhat on the leading edge of places like Right to Dream, Hazelnut Grove, what are called self-managed camps, or now they're becoming more than camps. Actually, Hazelnut Grove, I was just down there on Sunday. They had a party. I get goosebumps, actually. It's really a remarkable place. There's these, they call tiny houses. They're houses, on foundations, and people are organizing to deal with the problems of water and, what used to be a really muddy area. People are actually organizing their own lives, which is kind of does go against the competitive system. So that's one of the demands that is being made, is to actually find other places like that. Mm-hmm. We're going to get into that right now. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that, Jason. But we have Mitch in Beaverton on the line. Go ahead.
Thanks for having this program. And I think that the points your guests are making are driving us to have to look at what has not worked and what are the limitations in this paradigm about what can we do, what can our mayor, what can our city council do, because this isn't a city-scale problem. This is a national-scale problem. We are coming off a year and a half of a campaign season for national office, And I haven't heard the homeless crises that have been declared, not just by Mayor Hales. Before Mayor Hales got around to it, the mayor of Boise, Idaho, declared a homeless emergency. Seattle had declared a homeless and housed renters emergency because of market forces. And we haven't seen any push for the kind of national security oversight and budgeting that if this problem were caused by Muslims instead of a market-driven economy, the money would be there. It would be declared a national security problem. And instead of leaving it to oligarchs like Homer Williams, will he come up with enough money? And then will the city council decide that the money Homer Williams has dedicated to building a huge homeless facility, multi-service facility modeled on the San Antonio model, whether it could set up shop there on front in the neighborhood that is being planned, but then, and Dan Saltzman, the housing commissioner of all, decided to advocate for that after 7 years of the first part of Charlie Hales' mayoral term, doing nothing except building high-priced housing that there isn't even enough people earning high prices to buy, so that the condos have to be converted to leases, but they're still not at anything that is affordable. So what is happening is five and six people have to go in and rent a one-bedroom apartment. That is what market forces has done.
So
and what I am distressed about is that locally we fall into this paradigm trap of calling it a local problem. I haven't seen any effort to put this in front of candidates running for national office.
So let's get our guest take on what you're saying. That you're making a whole bunch of excellent points, but maybe we should get them to address a few of them. Okay. Anybody?
Guess I'm wondering what his exact question is. What can we do, or what can
we
do?
I'm praising what you're doing by talking about it from the local level. I'm asking Paul, where has the political organization within Portland been to link up with the other cities that have declared homeless emergencies and put some questions before the candidates that for a year and a half were running for office, or even put them in front of Ron Wyden, who doesn't act like there is any emergency in
his
state?
To the extent that people are listening to this program and what you just said, I think we'll just leave it there. I'm just the host of this program. I mean, I think what we're talking about here is what's happening in Portland. And I think a lot of people, what I've been hearing is a lot of people are watching what's happening in Portland. I think, the idea of, direct action and directly confronting where you are, these things, has resonant effect. We see that in a lot of different areas. So I think, to the extent that people, you're sparking people's minds to inspire them to confront our legislative, our elected officials to confront these questions you're raising. I think that's great. I think people should confront the officials because they have, they have access to resources and decision-making authority that we don't have. But what I think that's separate from what we're talking about here. And I think we should concentrate on what's happening at the Springwater Corridor because the deadline is now September 1st. So thank you for calling, and the number to call is 503-231-8187. So let's talk about what I brought up, these idea of self-managed camps, because in essence, there are people living in organized, more or less organized groups. And I've heard different things from different people. Maybe just, Jason, you could talk about the experience of living out there for our listeners. I think that would be really valuable.
Well, it's great. I mean, it's great in the aspects of the communities that have been put together, like Hazelnut Grove and Forgotten Realms. And
what is Forgotten Realms? I hadn't even heard of that one.
Well, Forgotten Realms, I'll let Amanda.
That's one of the first organized camps that Backpacks of Hope started serving. Forgotten Realms is it's still building. It's still getting there. It's not quite where Right to Dream is and Hazelnut Grove, but they're getting there. And it is another organized camp, north side of Portland. Great community. Just they have the code of conduct. They're right across from Emmanuel Hospital. We actually are very, very close with the members there in Forgotten Realms, and they also do service work out in the community. They join a couple of them are with Boots on the Ground, so they're
and
growing.
What's Boots on the Ground?
It's another organization that we're community partners with. They are actually in this fight with us. They have a little bit of different plans than we do. We're on the resistance side. They're trying to find property to get these people that want to move safely. They're actually trying to build another organized camp like we just spoke about. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited for that.
And so, but so are there people living together in an organized? We talk about like, there's also must be tensions. There must be all sorts of different kinds of people. There must be people who don't want to have anything to do with anybody else. There must be, I mean, 500 people, there's a lot going on out there.
Well, yes, but that, you have that in the housed community,
right,
too. I mean, you have
but
a neighbor
it, it,
exa-
it makes things, it creates special difficulties, I can imagine.
It does. I mean, and I mean, it's ju- I mean, I keep saying it's just like the housed community. You have your people that are not so friendly. You have your people that just don't want to work well with others. But then, for the most part, the people we deal with, everybody's great together. They have working communities. They have a hierarchy. They have, I mean, they come together. If something's, there's an issue, people will come together, talk about it, and then deal with the problem how it needs to be dealt with. And I mean, it's a working society. It is a working society inside of a society. And I wish people could see what's going on out there. From my perspective, from Amanda's perspective, we see working societies that govern themselves, and outsiders looking in are like, oh, that's not what we're used to. It's ran differently, yes. But the people we deal with are just, I mean, they're outstanding people. I'd say more than 95% of them are decent, happy, not happy. I mean, they're not happy they're on the streets, but they're living a cohesive lifestyle.
Well, there must be some compensatory, you know, I wouldn't say benefits, but I mean, in some ways, you know, you kind of might get a little freedom from kind of the doggy dog competitive culture that we're all trapped in. I mean, frankly, I mean, I don't want to romanticize it because I wouldn't, you know, want to be exposed to the, I mean, maybe if I was younger, I would, I don't know. But anyway, it's just interesting to hear because you must have had your eyes open. I don't know what you thought about, you know, people living in a houseless situation before you had to. But anyway, let me bracket that because we got a full slate of callers. And let's go to our first caller.
This is Joe in Oregon.
Joe in Oregon. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, I was going to suggest, I don't know if there's a website where people that are maybe looking for a roommate or somebody they could stay in their home and help out with the chores or whatever can hook up with homeless people. And maybe that could be taken nationally. You know, where people with homes that have room to share, or campers in the backyard, whatever, you know, room for homeless. Some kind of a, is there a place where a person can go and look, you know?
Craigslist?
Well, yeah, that's.
But no,
that
you bring
thing,
up an interesting.
Is there like a homeless website where, you know, people that are homeless can look and people with homes that rooms to share?
That's an interesting idea because I know one of the, at the rally and other places I've heard is people have suggested actually loosening the, I don't know what the regulations are of people camping in people's private. I mean, allowing someone into your house is one thing, but there's people have backyards, and you know, and that it is a thing in Portland. I've seen people living in backyards. I don't know what the regulations are, but
We're actually really confused on that ourselves. It's something that we've been bringing up over the past week, trying to find solutions and asking the housed, those who support, open up their backyards, put a tent or two back there. when we were at the meeting, they were kind of confused, but they were under the impression, the mayor and his staff, that it could possibly be legal because we're under state of emergency to have people in your backyard. But we have Jesse Sponberg. He actually has tents. He has a small community in his backyard, and he got a citation for that.
Oh, really? What was the nature of the citation?
I am not sure on the details. I know that I had brought up that, you know, maybe we could start going around to house neighbors and forming some sort of committee or small community that are willing to put people in their backyards right now instead of having these people dispersed all over. And Jesse stepped in and said, well, hey, I just got the citation. So it really conflicts with what the mayor's office told us, because it makes sense that if we're under a state of emergency, why can't we as housed people put these people in our own backyards and help them? I don't see, you know, what the problem is there. And so we are trying to find a solution for that, but I do not know of a website or anything like that where
there's anybody out there who does websites. This is your opportunity to step
right?
forward.
And obviously there's that fear of, oh, letting someone, I mean, there's so many stereotypes out there of the houseless community. Like, do I want to let this person in my home? We need to get past that, first of all, and I hope that someday we can. But I think that's a wonderful idea to create a website and have people open up our homes, you know.
So there's so many directions we're going in here. But I think that's something to you know, people writing these letters to the city council and to Hales, that's should be a good thing, an important thing to mention. You know, keep Portland weird, right? Is that what they say? So let's go to another caller here. We go to someone in the Richmond neighborhood. I didn't get their name. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Jersey.
Jersey, hi.
Hey, as a person who actually did live in someone's backyard, actually camping from the generosity of a almost total stranger person here in the lovely city of Portland 25 years ago, I can tell you what a difference it made for me to get by. I have not been in a tent since, so that's certainly good. But I think really where we need to get this conversation is, how do we know who's on our side? Because honestly, this issue has been around long enough that certain infrastructure and certain political infrastructure has kind of defined what is actually needed, and it hasn't succeeded, obviously. And what I'm referring to is building more shelters instead of going after the regulation of landlords. And because basically, if you really think about it that way, every shelter you build is more expenditure based on the fact that you won't regulate a landlord, the way I see it. And the area of who I know is who's protecting, who's advocating is getting grayer and difficult for me sometimes, although I'm hoping it's getting better. I'm not sure. The Citizens Alliance of Tenants, is Portland Tenants United inside of that organization, or are they two entirely different, entirely separate groups?
They are two different groups.
Okay. Because when I pop up on the web, Giving Violence of Tenants comes up first. And honestly, I've called them more than a couple of times, and I'm sure it could be funding, I'm sure it could be a lack of people, but I found them very ineffective. I myself even volunteered for them, and in the state of which I was given my options of what I could do for them, I found it ineffective. And I had only heard of Portland Tenants United in the last, like, maybe 3 or 4 years. So, excuse my ignorance. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay. So what I'm looking for is a united proposal, and much like the gentleman talked about, national discussion on this. I think we, in a community that actually has a house and a roof over their head, certainly has to be part of the process in order to, so that Hales or anybody in city government can't say that, we're protecting the people's right to live in homes. I don't want anybody to talk for me in that part of it. What I want is to make sure that the community that's getting gentrified out of their homes is protected first. Absolutely. And I should even put that caveat along with handicapped folks and, of course, folks over 60, you know, seniors. The problem seems to be revolving around that united voice and crossing that line that landlords need to be regulated. And I mean in a way that is united with people who have homes. And so I would look for an organizing model with that. And I think that's about all I can comment on now, but I would like to say additionally that when the five-year waiting list to get into public housing, things like Home Forward and some stuff, is that long, therefore it takes as much energy to guarantee protection for those people waiting. Because if they've signed up for stuff and they're qualified, they should kind of be top priority to deal with right away and not move it as this is a shelter for them. We need to get homes ready. Okay. So where did the money come from? Well, I say the money comes from something very simple, and this is it, and I won't talk anymore after this. You take the sort of almost capital gains approach to those folks who flip those houses, and you take a percentage off of that, and it could probably be as low as 5% from each of that, and that's actually off their money. They made money off it. They made the damage. They need to pay for it. And so basically you do that, you take that as a tax, you help pay for the housing.
Okay. Thank you so much. You've made some excellent points, and I appreciate that. And let's – maybe Katie, you want to quickly respond?
Yeah, I mean, I do have to say that you know, Portland Tenants United, to me at least, seems to be a response to the you know, lack of progress that we've seen, to the fact that so many people, like this caller, are frustrated with what seems like a lack of action. And, you know, PTU is really focused on, like, putting pressure on leaders and bringing tenants together and, like, standing up for our rights. And, I mean, we totally agree. Like, our ultimate goal here is to put some controls, at the very least, on housing, so that people can stay in their homes. Like, there's nothing wrong with people moving here, but we need to protect those who live here first. We need to keep them housed, and we absolutely have to do that by controlling what landlords can do. They've really got, like, a free check to do anything they want at the moment. But, like, I also have to say that, you know, even if we get rent control, even if we get an end to no-cause evictions, that's still not going to be enough. I actually moved from San Francisco a few years ago where I had rent control and where I had just-cause eviction, and I was still eventually priced out because, you know, my work was getting farther away. I couldn't afford the commute. Like, businesses and everything get pushed out of the city as rents go up and up and up. The nonprofit I worked for could no longer afford to stay in the city. And, like, those are the things that are starting to happen here. So that's, I mean, that's why I'm in this, is we can start by enacting a rent freeze, so that we can keep the people who are housed in their homes until we can find, like, a longer-term solution. And that's really what we need to do.
I promised that we had a housed resident from the Lentz community who's been involved in this issue would join the conversation, and I believe he is on the line with us. Robert Schultz, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for patiently waiting. So I mentioned a few things at the outset. I did mention that there are conflicts and issues between the unhoused and of the residents of the Springwater Corridor and the people, particularly in the Lentz community, but obviously all along the Springwater Corridor. Tell us a little bit about your experience being someone who's involved in the Lentz Neighborhood Association, and also getting to know the people who live along the Springwater Corridor.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about this. It means quite, you know, a lot to me. I've been here since 92. I've watched the neighborhood evolve. We have always had, and excuse me, because I'm going to say homeless, because I'm most used to that term. It's not intended to insult anybody. But we've always had homeless in our community. We've had them before I was born. There's been folks living on the street here. So the problem that a lot of residents kind of raise is not, you know, that we have people living on the street that need to be supported. It's rather that the city has seemed to pit us against one another and has seemed to push a lot of folks into our district without consultation, without an eye for how does this district absorb this number of people that are, you know, need support. They need help. They're living in crisis, or they're living with mental illness or what have you. I've chatted with folks up and down the Springwater Trail that live on the street. And I say, hey, you know, one of the first things I say is, you know, hey, I'm Robert. I live in the neighborhood. And then I usually ask, you know, if they're from the area, if they've had someone come and talk to them, an advocate or what have you. And I'm oftentimes sad to say that I reach communities that are not being serviced by advocates. And that terribly bothers me, because if I was possessed with that task, there wouldn't be a stone unturned. I met a woman the other day named Rainy. I'm sorry if I have her name poorly done, but I only met her in properly once. And she had talked about spending the last year and a half serving folks on the trail, supporting folks on the trail. She has an intimate awareness of the trials that they're faced with. And she's also very real about that there's a portion of that community that are criminal and they're hiding there from prosecution. So it's very, very complex, because oftentimes in the neighborhood, a resident in a house will say, oh, they're all criminals. And he's right. There are some criminals. Another one will say, we need to help them. There's disadvantaged folks that are economic refugees. Basically, they've been costed out of living. And they're right. There are some that are there. And then there's another that'll say, well, there's homeless, mental health challenged folk. And, well, that's true, too. So a lot of these things you hear from people are accurate, but they're not accurate to the entire body. And I think that's one of the biggest problems we've faced as a community, is trying to get a level playing field for constructive conversation without getting stuck on what someone sees that population as. Because once they've had a chance to talk, at least that's been my experience, they recognize there are folks in there that they want to help. And that's the place we need to be coming to. Our city should be facilitating that, our city government, and they are not. In fact, they're working against us. You know, we only have two full-time rangers for parks on the east side of the river. And I think things like that are really demonstrative of how we've been taken for granted as a community.
I heard you mention that if you were an advocate or out there, I know that you expressed that there are places where people haven't even been reached, and you're absolutely right. But just like the service providers that are paid and the volunteer advocates, it is extremely hard to stretch ourselves. We couldn't possibly reach everyone, and we do look and we do try. And one of the things that we as a community housed or unhoused need to ask ourselves is what more can we do? Like what I always encourage people, even if they don't volunteer their time out there, carry some trash bags in your car, get out and have a conversation, sit down and have lunch with them. I mean, those are the ways that the community can reach out even further and further and connect these people to resources. I know that there's many places where we just don't get to, and it's pretty sad. So I just wanted to touch on that.
And that was not a condemnation. I was not condemning it. I was using that as an illustrator of how vast the problem is, or the problem people are suffering with. It's so big that you can't expect a volunteer. I mean, kind of mirroring exactly your sentiment. I'm sorry if it came off as a condemnation. It is not at all. And I think there is an issue with this idea that every member of the community needs to stop and take care of homeless folks. That I agree, that would be great, but yeah, we don't live in that world. Mm-hmm. And so we have to kind of navigate this, like folks that just go to work and back and they don't want to even interact with the person living next door to them for 10 years. I had a neighbor that did this for a while before they moved. That happens just house to house. So it's also going to happen unhoused to house. And broaching those gaps in a decent fashion. You know, I talked to a fellow on the trail named Diamond. He's a massive gentleman. I was watching him pick up grocery carts and dump out the trash into a dumpster, picking the whole grocery cart up and dumping it out. He's an amazing fella, and he's living on the trail. And he said, better than anybody I've heard, and he's not an advocate, he's a person living there, he said, we need to be talking to members of these folks living in these houses, and we need to be showing who we are as individuals. And I absolutely agree with that. And he is well regarded in the community. The folks at some of the local auto shops know him as a very, you know, good guy. That's more the stuff I'd like to see. People facilitating better interactions, communicating more together. But there is a sad reality. A person with a mental health issue that's schizophrenic or paranoid is not apt to want to introduce themselves or interact. And that is a good chunk of our population out here. I don't mean a majority or anything like that, but it is a solid number of folks out here. And that's, I think, one of the most challenging elements of this. And then, of course, you have criminals that are hiding in there. And that's very challenging as well. And I've heard a homeless man just recently said, you know, before they sweep anybody, they need to do a warrant sweep. And he said, I bet you that the problems will go away right there. So that's also a reality everybody's facing, because both housed and homeless are faced with that reality that these guys are predating on that population.
So I had neglected to remind people, this is a special program here on KBOO Community Radio. We're talking about the housing crisis, the issue of houseless people living along the Springwater Corridor in particular, but in general, in particular, because there's a Charlie Hales announced a planned, quote, clean up, unfortunate phrase, of the corridor originally for August 1st. Now he postponed it till September 1st. And I have three guests in the studio and one on the phone. In the studio, I have Jason Pilcher, a houseless resident of the corridor for a year who got pushed out because of the housing skyrocketing housing prices. I have Amanda Reese of Portland Backpacks of Hope and Katie Barrett of Portland Tenants United. And on the phone, I have Robert Schultz, with a longtime resident of the Lentz neighborhood and a member of the Lentz Neighborhood Association, and someone who, unlike a number of the residents there, I'm not, again, generalizing because we shouldn't generalize any, some of them don't have want to have anything to do with the people living along the corridor, and some of them do, and he's one who does. And we thank him for joining this conversation. We only have 10 minutes left. We have a full slate of callers. Let's just go to one caller. I wanted to get Jason's to interact with Robert a little bit. Let's go to Dee Dee real quick. Hello, you're on the air. Oh.
Hello, this is Robert.
Oh, Robert. Wrong line. Let's go, Jason. I'm sure you have some thoughts on what Robert was saying.
I agree with Robert in a lot of aspects there. People, okay. I was blind to homelessness until I became homeless. I am a firefighting veteran. I don't do drugs. I don't have mental illnesses that are affecting me and causing me to do anything bad out there. People need to realize that we are all human beings. We all need to eat. We all need shelter. Get out and meet people. That's the best approach. Get out and meet people. You'll find that most of the people out there are straight, average people just like you. It's just hard. I mean, I'm on both sides of the thing here. I'm an advocate. I'm also a houseless person. I can have a conversation with somebody for about an hour and tell them about my life and my firefighting experience. And then the minute I mention that I'm houseless, I've had people turn around and walk away from me. That hurts. I've saved lives for a living. I save lives, help people now for a living, even though I'm on the streets. People need to have a little bit more of an understanding of what's going on. And I appreciate, Robert, you've been doing really well out there. We've met out there on the meetings. And, I think we just need to continue to push on and just get past all of the stigmas and and, oh, this person's mentally ill, this person's... They're human beings. We are human beings, every one of us on this planet. If you have ears, you don't have ears, you're listening. We are all human beings, and we should take care of each other. And if we can't take care of each other, help them take care of themselves. I mean, just a little boost up, a little bit of a positive enforcement, and speak to people.
So, Robert, since you're online, and time is rapidly ticking away here for this hour, what are some of the major complaints that you're hearing from people in the Lentz neighborhood?
So, I mean, it's a wide array. I mean, there's always othering that's going to happen. I've seen it when a guy moves in next to another guy, and excuse me for using guy, I don't mean to be gender biased, but when a person moves in next to another person and they don't know that person, and maybe there's a cultural barrier, and then they make, you know, general judgments. You see the same exact thing with folks living on the trail, living on the street. The guy or gal, sorry, I'm really stuck in using guys today. The person getting cans, you know, there's no idea of what that person's doing with those cans. And so then all these assumptions abound. Oh, they're doing a drug habit. Oh, they're, you know, just getting more booze, or they're wealthy and they're just taking cans. I mean, these ridiculous kind of constructs come because nobody wants to walk out and say, hey, what's up with the cans? Are you know, do you need more? Do you need water? Or do you need some kind of other help? So that happens. And so when that is applied to homelessness, you hear people say, well, there was a needle in my driveway. That was from a homeless person. There was a bottle of urine tossed in my yard. That was from a homeless person. There was dog poop on my yard. That was from a homeless person. So they also go into someone rifled my car and jockey-boxed my car, a crime commonly associated with teens. And they say that was a homeless person. And so it's another case of kind of othering to kind of an extreme, because it's safer to think that the person that you don't know that also lives on the trail was the villain instead of the 13-year-old down the block that you have to deal with in a different fashion. So those are some of the things that happen. People coming to the house and taking water from someone's house is looked at as theft because it causes a bill to go up. And a lot of times it's folks that are already struggling with bills. And so when they see a $20 jump in their water bill, they feel it.
Well, let me just stop you there. That's an important point, you know, because certainly the people, I think, in the immediate vicinity there out in Lentz are obviously not wealthy people. So, you know, you've got an unfortunate division happening between people who really, you know, are not that far apart economically, right? I mean,
I absolutely agree. And I think that, again, you know, I condemn the city to a small degree. They've failed at facilitating a more positive interaction between two very relative low-end economic groups that I'm part of.
Whoops. That was unfortunate. Sorry, we lost Robert. We have another caller, but we only got 4 minutes left. Okay, Lawrence, just if you have a quick question or comment, and we have to wrap this show up. Go ahead.
Hi. I can present this hopefully fairly quickly. I'm basically homeless. I live in a commercial trailer. And my thought here is something I'm trying to help push in Salt Lake to deal with homelessness, because they're having problems figuring out what to do with money they just got from the government to do that. And it occurs to me we've got containers all over this country that could be easily converted. You look online and you can see how to do it. They've got the walls, the floors, and the ceiling built. All they have to do is put the stuff into it and make it so that the homeless people, they just put a bunch of them on an empty lot, and people have got a place to live and a place to gain back their dignity and then get themselves back into the workforce and get back on their feet.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to cut.
Something can be done around the whole country.
Okay, I'm going to have to cut you off right there. That's a good point. The problem with that is where to put them. And that's the $100,000 question is how to deal with this issue in the immediate term, as of September 1st, in the midterm and in the long term. And in the next 3 minutes, we don't have time, but I'd just like to open it up to some thoughts about this conversation and specifically what's going to happen leading up to September 1st.
Well, obviously, we're going to continue. I mean, I can't speak for all advocates and service providers or people in general. I know that Rose City Backpacks of Hope and Portland Tenants United have come together over the last couple of weeks, talking about helping the residents with resistance. We're not going anywhere. We're tired. Until you find us acceptable, humane living place, we're staying here. And I'm really, really happy that I joined forces with Portland Tenants United. They've been amazing. We agree on one thing. We're staying here until you find us a better place to go. I don't care if it's, you know, September 1st comes up. You know, we're standing ground. I mean, that's the plan. Hopefully we find solutions before that. So
yes, and we are, you know, doing our best to provide whatever support we can to the residents who want to stay, to ensure that things remain peaceful, that they have what they need, that, like, and, you know, along those lines, we're reaching out to other people who want to help in this effort. And if anybody out there is interested in helping support these people who want to stay, you can send an email to standupforspringwater@gmail.com. That's standupforspringwater@gmail.com. And that's one way that you can get in touch with us if you want to be like one of those people on the front lines helping, you know, the most vulnerable people who need the most help.
And Jason, I'm not able to give you the last word because we only have a minute. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And appreciate you all coming in. And hopefully we'll continue this conversation on KBOO. And again, go to various websites, Portland Tenants United, Backpacks of Hope. Do you have a
website? Just go to, we don't have a website yet, but just go to Rose City Backpacks of Hope on Facebook.
And that's going to have to wrap it up for today. My name is Paul Rowland, your host for this special public affairs program. And write to the city of Portland. Go to the, again, the Portland Tenants United Facebook page. They've got a Take Action Now item you can write, find out more. Go to 82nd and what's the cross street there where the Springwater Trail is? Anyway.
Oh, gosh. Right
it's
now.
It's a wide area, but yeah. 82nd, Flavel, Duke,
Lambert.
Wherever it crosses the Springwater Trail.
And take a bike ride up there. And we got to go. Thank you for listening.